Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For years, Tulsa Habitat for Humanity has been helping our community's vulnerable families in providing comfortable and affordable housing and education on the financial responsibility of homeownership. That home then becomes a major tangible asset for that family and a gateway out of economic hardship. But here in Tulsa, it's one family at a time, maybe 25 to 30 a year. Well, this year, Habitat is embarking on a major expansion in the number of homes they build, from around 25 to 30 houses a year now to around 150 houses 4 years from now. This will allow Habitat to transform many of the city's older neighborhoods, from fixing up one home in a rundown neighborhood where the mortgage may be underwater from day one because the neighborhood drives down the home's value, to fixing up a whole block or two, which in turn should spur private investment, which should allow for mixed income housing, a boon to both the city and to the new Habitat homeowner. In 2018, through a Zero Foundation grant, they'll also be expanding the qualification for Habitat homeowners to include potential home buyers who make more than Habitat's income guidelines but still can't qualify for traditional mortgages. They'll also be building multi-unit townhomes in order to make a real difference in affordable housing here in Tulsa. My guest today is the CEO of Tulsa Habitat for Humanity, Cameron Walker. Cameron Walker, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for the invite, Rich.
And Tulsa Habitat for Humanity is really doing some new innovative things from what we normally expect from Habitat. First of all, before we talk about that, let's talk about just the landscape here in the city of Tulsa. What is the current need for single-family affordable housing right now?
Well, it's never been more critical than it is right now. The National Low-Income Housing Coalition released a report in 2017 that stated that there is no longer a major city in the United States where someone making minimum wage can keep their housing expenses at or below 30% of their income. And so what we're seeing is family after family that is spending in excess of 50% of their take-home pay on housing. And so when you see that, all of a sudden you begin to realize some of these societal and systemic issues with check cashing businesses and pawn shops. Why these businesses are so prevalent in some of our at-risk neighborhoods is because they are there because a lot of these families are so overburdened that just to take care of their monthly living expenses, they're having to go to some of these kind of predatory lenders to make ends meet. So I am certainly a huge advocate and very biased when it comes to affordable housing. But I think if we can get housing costs under control, specifically on the low and moderate income part of the spectrum, we can begin to kind of chip away at some of these other issues that are really just so toxic in these neighborhoods.
In a lot of the neighborhoods where you're working at, those neighborhoods were for single-family affordable housing that were built right after World War II. And yet today, from a commercial aspect, occasionally you will see, you know, a little spark of something. But really, there's no effort like there was when that housing stock was first put up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we work primarily here in Kendall-Whittier, which the University of Tulsa is kind of located in. And it's kind of a tale of two neighborhoods. You have a south side and then you have a north side on where 244 kind of splits the two. And the south side has really experienced a tremendous resurgence in the last couple of years. Investment from the university, the George Kaiser Family Foundation has made a tremendous impact.
There's private investment as well.
Absolutely.
And sort of traditional starter homes, I think, in many ways.
Yeah.
And new construction.
David Charney, the owner of Capital Homes, has come in here and done a tremendous job adding to the new housing stock. Ed Scherer over with Kendall-Whittier Main Street has really addressed the economic side of it, bringing in new businesses. But what we're seeing is that very physical, literal, and figurative boundary of 244. The same kind of advancement and progress is not being made on the north side. So we're focusing a lot of our work on that area, both on the single family side, but then also getting into multifamily developments. And we want to pull some of the progress and success that we're seeing on the south side. We want to pull some of that for the benefit of the residents on the north side of 244. And so, you know, we're doing everything we can to kind of propel that.
We talked about some of those efforts in a moment. First, let's talk about how you're going to try to address that. And it's a significant shift in your funding model. What has Habitat's traditional funding model been? You've been your own banker, right?
Exactly. We've been our own mortgage company. We're a builder. And historically, if we wanted to build a house that cost $100,000, we would have to go out and raise the totality of that. And so through generous funders, we would go raise that. We would buy the material, build the home with volunteers, and then place a family in it. And we carried the note over 20, 30 years. In any community, and especially the community the size of Tulsa, to fundraise a deliverable that is that expensive and raise all of the money, I would need an army of fundraisers working 7 days a week. It's just not possible. So what we began to do was look around the country at other habitats, other low-income housing organizations, and just ask the question, is there a better way to do this? And we were very fortunate to find a model at Dallas Habitat for Humanity. They're kind of the flagship affiliate in the country. And essentially what they have done is they have leveraged banks' needs for something called a CRA credit, a Community Reinvestment Act credit. And what it does is it says that banks of a certain holding size, certain level, by law have to lend in minority-majority census tracts and low-income census tracts. The problem is that banks are just not set up to deal with low and moderate borrowers. They have a very high failure rate, very high default rate. What Habitat is really known for and what is great at is we are very good at doing that. We have a very high-touch servicing model. If someone misses a payment with us, you're getting a phone call. If you don't answer the phone, we're going to come knock on the door. Because what we have done over the course of a year to 2 years before you ever buy your home is we've created a relationship with this family. They have gone through financial education, an entire homeowner education college that kind of prepares them to be homeowners. And so we have a very intimate relationship with these families, and we're able to kind of remediate issues. So if there's been a loss of hours at work, or you've had a sick family member or sick child and you have to take off from work, we can modify that loan. And so we've done a very good job. So with this new model, essentially what this program does is we kind of stand between the bank and we stand between the borrower. And essentially we continue to service the loan. So the borrowers, we're the touch point.
You're the face.
But what we have now is we have access to the bank's capital. And so what we can now do is go from building 15 to 20 homes a year to over the next 5 years scale up to about 125 to 150 units a year. So when we do that, we have the real ability to make a physical impact on an area. And so we can really kind of come in and change kind of the fabric of an area. And so we're very excited about it. One of the big pieces of this was a $6.7 million grant that the Ann and Henry Zero Foundation made last year to help us both form a new organization called Boomtown Development Company. But the primary piece of that was to give us the ability to create a sustainable land acquisition fund, which to this point, we have really had to rely on donations of property and buying property that was so undesirable that we could afford it. And so it's really changed the calculus for us as an organization, but it's going to put our families in a much better position to benefit from some of the things that are happening in this neighborhood on a positive side that they can kind of latch on to.
You mentioned this model of where you prepare your homeowners for being homeowners. Can you give us a sense of what your mortgage failure rate is compared to, say, commercial banks that are operating under this credit and the failure rate they would have if they're just sort of trying to make loans to fulfill that requirement?
Yeah. Habitat as a whole has a foreclosure rate of about half of the national average. And like I said, that is due in large part to the relationship aspect of it, but to that high-touch servicing model.
And, of course, a bank that is putting out those loans in low-income areas and minority neighborhoods, it's probably far above the national average, their foreclosure rate, just in a traditional model.
Yeah, and it's not that the banks are bad, not that they don't have compassionate people there. It's just that they're functionally not set up to tend to borrowers in a nature.
And they tend to be very rigid in their borrowing practices,
yeah.
And so if somebody loses hours at work, they're not going to restructure a loan.
No. You miss a payment, you're going to get an auto-generated letter.
Yeah.
You miss another payment, you get that next auto-generated letter. And it's a very rote process. And so This new model gives those banks the ability to lend that capital, but let us buttress kind of that risk.
So you're talking about moving Habitat for Humanity from, say, 20 to 30 houses a year to 120 to 140 or 150 houses a year. What sort of difference does that make on a neighborhood that you're concentrating on? I mean, does that mean that the one house you build is no longer an outlier in the neighborhood? You sort of can transform a neighborhood very quickly?
Yeah. I mean, one of the drawbacks to what we have been doing is that we have placed a very deserving family in a new home. They have bought that home. And a lot of times the houses on either side of them or across the street are in disrepair. And we have had little ability to do anything to help remediate some of those physical kind of challenges on a street. And so for the first time, we can now go in and target an entire neighborhood like Kendall Whittier, but even kind of slice that up where we are targeting sectors and kind of working through the neighborhood. What we have done is tried to target assets in the neighborhood. So right now we are hugging the schools, we're hugging the parks, and then we're kind of working out from there. And so we really think that those assets are the anchors of the community. If we can reinvigorate those areas and create those kind of meeting places, gathering places, that does nothing but help the community, and then we can kind of spider vein out through the rest of it.
When you look at a lot of big cities and how neighborhoods regentrify or gentrify, a lot of times it is like the urban pioneers that come into a neighborhood that sort of fix up a couple of properties within a neighborhood that has sort of become run down. It sounds to me that what you've experienced in Tulsa is in certain neighborhoods, that just doesn't happen. When a couple of houses are fixed up, private investment doesn't flock to the area.
Yeah. Kendall Whittier is a great test kitchen for us and for other organizations working with low-income families to kind of test a theory of change. We really put a premium on developing mixed-income communities. We think that there is all sorts of evidence that suggests that when you intermingle low and moderate income families with families of means, that it always helps those on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder.
And I assume it doesn't hurt the people on the high end.
No, absolutely not. As you look across what businesses are trying to do with diversity, it's the same kind of concept in redeveloping a neighborhood. There are benefits to all sides of this to be living and working and playing in and amongst people that aren't exactly like you. And all of those benefits kind of go into kind of the health of a neighborhood. So when we're doing this, we're really trying to put a premium on that. That's why we're so excited in Kendall Whittier to have a private builder like Capital Homes in here working alongside us. So, you know, we just want to do everything we can to ensure that the people that are living in this neighborhood are not being displaced. And that's a real, real challenge that you see when you hear
gentrification, it means the existing residents move out and a new class of residents move in.
Yeah. And I don't want to pick on any neighborhoods, but there are some historical neighborhoods in town where that has happened, where the price of real estate has flown through the roof so quickly that people have been forced to leave. Landlords that have had these homes that they've been renting for years now see an opportunity to kind of divest and make a profit. And so those renters that have been in there are kind of stuck, you know, holding the pot. And so we just want to make sure that as we come in and we are redeveloping, we are not hurting those that are already there.
I assume that's another benefit of moving rapidly within a neighborhood. If you're doing 100 houses in a neighborhood, all of a sudden these families who have qualified to get into these, they're reaping the benefits of seeing their house appreciate.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they have a mortgage on a house that's gaining in value.
Yeah, one of the disturbing things that I found when I first started at Habitat was we did a reappraisal of 15 random homes that we had on our books. All 15 were underwater. They had depreciated so bad. So when you begin to think about, okay, so we're working with low and moderate income borrowers. We have put them in undesirable areas of town. Typically, schools are extremely depressed, facing a lot of challenges. A lot of times these homes were in food deserts. We began asking the question, are we doing anything to actually help these families? I thought no. And then are we doing anything to help the neighborhoods? And, you know, we could not answer in the affirmative. So you know, going into a community like Kinder-Witter, where you have people working in the schools, working on economic development, obviously having the University of Tulsa is a huge asset here. Just the amount of private investment has been tremendous.
When you say that the houses went underwater, it's not because they've become dilapidated in any ways. It's just that you built a house that was worth so much money in a neighborhood where everything else is worth far less. Immediately, the value of the house in appraisal goes down, right?
These houses were underwater the day we sold them. And
wow.
It was a real eye-opener for us as an organization.
My guest today is Cameron Walker. He's the CEO of Tulsa Habitat for Humanity. Tulsa Habitat for Humanity is changing the way in many ways how it works. It shifted its funding model, which allows them to significantly increase the number of houses they are building or rehabbing. And they're also a strategic focus in how they build their houses. And that strategic focus is on Kinder-Whittier and the Crutchfield neighborhood, correct?
It is. And both of these neighborhoods were some of the original suburbs of Tulsa. And so as downtown has redeveloped, as you've seen areas like the Pearl District come back, Kinder-Whittier was kind of the next logical step for redevelopment. And so it was an opportunity for us to jump out, partner with all of the other organizations that are working here, but also create an opportunity where our families could really benefit from some of the gains that are happening in this area. And so there has been so much turnaround just in the last couple of years. We really think that over the next 2 to 3 years, we can kind of put a capstone on our work in this neighborhood. Private investment will then take over, which is really the big win. And we can kind of continue marching on to it.
Yeah, you have a lot of, you have this core of affordable housing that was built by, with family help and families placed in there, where all of a sudden, if this neighborhood takes off, all of a sudden they have an asset that is growing in value, which gives them, it creates assets, lasting assets for the family that's probably been on the edge for a while.
Yeah, and an important thing to note, most of our families, in fact, probably all of our families, do not have disposable income to contribute to 401ks, to Roth IRAs. Their biggest vehicle for building wealth is their home. And so you're exactly right. Putting them in a neighborhood that is no longer a neighborhood on the margins, but has become a neighborhood of choice, that's tremendous for our families, because we want our families to stay in there for the long term, but we do realize as opportunities arise for them to better their education, to take do better jobs as their family grows, there's going to be opportunities for them to move to different areas of town or buy a bigger home, whatever that is. And yeah, we want, when they go to list that house and sell it, we want them to reap some of those gains.
We traditionally think of Habitat as taking a property that's either dilapidated or run down. Maybe sometimes it may be a vacant lot at that point and building a house on it, or it may be rehabbing an older house that's in disrepair. You're also taking on a new model where you're creating, this village at Whittier Heights, which is on the side of the old Whittier Elementary School.
It is.
Tell us about this project, because this is like a townhouse development.
Yeah, we had a fantastic opportunity with another nonprofit in town, Vintage Housing, that focuses on creating housing for low-income seniors. They had purchased this site a number of years ago and had just turned out that kind of their plans for the property were scaled back a little. So we began discussing with them the opportunity to redevelop the rest of the site. And this is going to be a new step for Tulsa Habitat for Humanity. As we looked around the country, Denver, Dallas, Atlanta, some of these other larger cities, they were already well ahead of us on kind of this more dense model. And a lot of times the driver has been the cost of real estate in these bigger cities. And so they've been forced to create more dense communities. So anyway, this was an opportunity for us to test it in kind of a small fashion. This will be a townhome owner-occupied development of about 30 townhomes. And we have programmed this out. We're working with the great architects over there at Synergy. This is something in the design phase that we are trying to kind of an homage to the past, where the great architecture there of Kinder-Whittier Main Street, some of those old brick structures with the flat roofs, we're kind of borrowing from that. And we hope to kind of carry a little bit of that positive redevelopment on the north side of 244.
So this is going to be looking sort of like the Central Park development, but maybe not such expensive brownstones?
Exactly. I mean, that's we've drawn a little bit of inspiration from that as well. I mean, this is an old model that's been incorporated all around the country. But yeah, certainly that's probably the example that most people would kind of look to in town.
Is this going to be senior affordable housing, or was that the vision of the your original partner?
No, Vintage Housing will be building a three-story, 50-unit independent senior living center on the north side of the property.
Okay.
Ours will be traditional Habitat families and kind of with Boomtown a little bit expanded on the income side.
Interesting. And how, why is that important on the expanding on the income side?
Habitat is a fantastic organization, but as far as the scope of the families that we work with, we've been limited to a very narrow slice of the pie. And so we have—
As far as the people who need affordable housing.
Yeah, we've traditionally worked with the families that make between 50 to 60% of the area median income. Well, there are still that 60 to 100% to where you're at area median income. All of those people are still living under the poverty line. And most all of those families would have a tremendous challenge walking into a bank and getting a traditional loan for a home. So what we did was we formed Boomtown Development Company. It's an affiliate of Tulsa Habitat for Humanity, and it allowed us to really expand kind of that band of incomes that we can work with. And so the thing that I talk about with donors and with volunteers, we put an emphasis on mixed income. Well, if we have a family of four making $50,000 living next to a family of four making $25,000, those two families are living vastly different lifestyles. But being able to put them living in close proximity to each other, doing life together, building relationships, we think that's going to be beneficial for both, and especially for that family on the lower side of that.
When are you expecting to break ground on that?
We hope to break ground this summer on the villages, mm-hmm. and we really hope that this is going to be the first of many projects like this. For us to build capacity up to 120 to 150 families a year, we realize that doing this with single family lots is going to be a challenge. So we really see chipping away at this housing stock issue. We're going to do a lot of this through dense projects like this. And so when you're looking at historic neighborhoods like Crutchfield, with their proximity to downtown, with the new BMX facility going in, we really think that we can build something that is going to appreciate over time, that's going to bring a lot of value, but also really add to the redevelopment that's going on downtown and kind of pull that out.
You talked a little bit about the aesthetics of what you're actually building at this townhome site, which is, it's really the heart of where Kendall neighborhood meets Whittier neighborhood. But when you're going in a concentrated effort in a neighborhood, you know, these are our old neighborhoods, and you're building a whole bunch of houses, how much care do you take to sort of, especially if you're getting properties in which you're having to scrape and rebuild, to sort of fit within the neighborhood so it doesn't look like a brand new neighborhood has popped into what was a 60, 70-year-old neighborhood?
No, absolutely. You're correct. And when we first were approached by Josh Miller with the George Kaiser Family Foundation and Kirk Wester were growing together Tulsa, they approached us and said, hey, we see the need. We want you to be working in Kendall Whittier. You just can't build the house that you're building right now. And I got it totally, because what you want to do is exactly what you were saying. You want to put something back in there that doesn't look completely out of place. And so we worked very hard with a firm here in town, Dewberry Architects, to develop a craftsman style home. Couple of things that we just were not doing with regularity. We did not put multiple bathrooms in a home. First dedication I ever took place handling was a single father with seven children, and we placed him in a five-bedroom home with one bathroom.
Oh my God.
And I just looked at him. I said, good luck getting in the bathroom, because I think the five oldest children were girls. Our base model home is now a three-bedroom, two-bathroom, one-car garage home. And the garage was a real kind of milestone for us. We had never built a home in Tulsa with a garage. It just historically was not kind of looked at as a need. But when we began to look at it, you know, most of these families aside from their home, their second largest investment and asset is their vehicle. And if you're using that vehicle to get to work, which most of our families are hourly employees, you get to work 10 minutes, 15 minutes late, that car isn't functioning, that puts your job in real jeopardy. So we really put a premium on protecting that asset, and a garage was a piece of that. Not only, you know, that, but also when we began to look at kind of resale value, if you have any other family that came to look and buy that house, one of the things you're going to, well, where's the garage? You know, I mean, that's just America now, you know, it is.
So you're going to go from building roughly 25 to 30 houses to, in 5 years, 150. Do you have the volunteer manpower, the people that have always made Habitat go, to ramp up that ability to build that many houses?
Well, we have tremendous volunteers. In fact, if you can imagine taking a house from you know, raising walls to kind of that final, installing that final door or whatever that is, it takes hundreds and hundreds of volunteers for one home. You know, over 20 homes, we're talking thousands of volunteers. What we're going to do, we're obviously, Habitat is known for those volunteer opportunities. We will continue to do that to a certain point. But beyond that, we are going to move to a more production builder-oriented model where we incorporate more contractors. And that's primarily because we can, on volumes of this number, we can actually kind of negotiate and bring the price point down of these homes, which is an ancillary benefit for our homeowners, also helps us stretch donor dollars. So to answer your question, we'll continue to have thousands of volunteer opportunities, but really at a certain point, we will have to kind of take over and use more of a contractor-based model just to hit those numbers.
Well, it sounds like it's exciting times at Tulsa Habitat for Humanity. I know you're already involved in the Kendall Whittier neighborhood. Do you expect within like a year or two to say, wow, we've made a tremendous difference on this street or in this little couple of block areas?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're already seeing it around Sequoia Elementary School on the north side of Kendall Whittier, around Crosstown Learning Center, and Archer Park. We've really focused our redevelopment efforts on those assets in the community. And we really think that those are the gathering spots where people are going to come. We want our families to be putting their children in the schools in the neighborhood. As we add to the tax base, obviously we think that benefits the schools in the neighborhoods, that benefits the other homes in the neighborhood. And so we really, that asset mapping is huge for us. And then as we kind of branch out from there, we go street to street to street. And eventually, like you said, yeah, I hope to look 2 or 3 years and where we can say, hey, our work is coming to a close. And we're already seeing it. You know, there was a point 2 years ago when I saw a concrete truck in the neighborhood. I knew it was probably ours. And now that's not the case. We're seeing private investment. We're seeing people buying homes and remodeling them. And that's fantastic. You know, Habitat is not the total answer. We believe we can be kind of the catalyst for that investment and that change. Where there was no real estate market, we can establish one or we can help stabilize one. But really, it's going to be that private investment that takes us into the finish line.
All right. Cameron, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Cameron Walker is the CEO of Tulsa Habitat for Humanity. Habitat is embarking on a major expansion in the number of affordable homes they build in the Tulsa area over the next 4 years. You can learn more at tulsahabitat.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.